Off the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And it is Keeneland opening day. And from what we can tell, and in communication with a few horsemen in and around Keeneland, and I will check again because it's been about 20 minutes since I last looked. Right now, it seems that things are okay weather-wise and turf-wise. They've had a little rain this morning, but the concern about turf racing today appears pretty good. I mean, certainly the stake, the Transylvania, I wouldn't worry about. We'll talk to Marcus Hirsch in about 10 minutes, actually, and get the latest, because Marcus is on hand. But particularly notable, because not just the stake, there is the $3 Turf Pick 3. And reminders, Jim Goodman and Keeneland support team sending out those flares to keep that in mind, the last three turf races of any card at Keeneland, and the $3 increment, and the other two portions of that pick three is the fifth, a first level allowance going a mile for the boys, four and up, and it's a good group actually, and there's actually a couple of decent prices that are worth looking at, and then there's the stake, the Transylvania, this really intriguing group of six that are separated. I wrote up that maybe the field was separated by two lengths, give or take. And, there's the two Chad Browns, obviously Verbal, the shorter of the two prices, but Napoleonic War is a horse that, people may discount. First out winner, brought this up yesterday or maybe on Wednesday, a first out winner in January at Tampa with a modest fig. But, it's Peter Brandt, it's a homebred, a war front, and, one easy as pleased, and has actually had, 2 months to mature further. So I would not just, I'm certainly going to include, in fact, in the tickets I put together, I tried to find a way to use all six in here. Coinage on the front end for Cassie with Louis Saez. And Louis Saez, so good in this scenario where he's going to be controlling speed. And he does that thing he does around the turn when he lets him out a notch and all of a sudden, kind of builds up a couple length lead and then, really opens the throttle off the turn, and suddenly everybody's panic-stricken. But there's not a lot of other obvious pressure in this group of six in the Transylvania. So, interesting scenario there, and the more I look personally at the Ashland, I'm anxious to see what Marcus's thoughts are, and James Scully. In fact, I'll give you the whole lineup momentarily. But in the Ashland, the more I look, the more I like Brad Cox with Interstate Daydream. And of course, yesterday in that conversation with Marty, rightfully pointing to Happy Soul as your pace setter, but Florent Giroux, who's been making a habit and practice of going forward, Interstate Daydream is going to set up shop behind her and is going to get first run. And then I think she's the one to, try to collar late, and that includes horses like Awake at Midnight and Nest and Cocktail Moments, etc. So I thought that Interstate Daydream could be a pretty, I'm going to be a heavy-handed A with Interstate Daydream. And in the nightcap, too, when you're building tickets, isn't Bay Storm again with Saez. This is for Jonathan Thomas. Bay Storm feels like the one to beat. Brad Cox has got that Angel Palm, a first North America type that could be anything. This is a Judmont that was sort of keeping second-tier company in Ireland at Ferry House and Nace and so forth, Dundalk. Last win came at Dundalk. So anyway, there's so much good racing. And New York, you're already off the turf, so we're going to wait another day, ideally tomorrow, for the Wood card. We'll talk to Dave Grenig later. Saving the turf debut for tomorrow. Let me give you the rundown and tell you what we're doing today. And it's really a handicapping extravaganza for the most part. Kappapalooza. Marcus Hirsch first from Keeneland. So we'll get Marcus's, and as he told you when we last spoke with him, he was a little fuzzy-headed after his international trip. But we'll get Marcus's take on these first few cards at Keeneland, and they are deep and compelling. James Scully as well in Hour 1. We'll get James's Kentucky Derby report. We'll see where he ranked out what came last week in the Florida Derby and Arkansas Derby. Nick Tamaro early today. Nick has got a funny morning. So Nick asked for the early bird, which is fine because, as it happens, Jay Privman was at Go Kings Go last night. Jay, you know, who shares a ticket package for his beloved Kings, and he was downtown for the Kings yesterday. So last night, I did not see how they did. So Jay at 11 and Nick at 10 flip-flopped. We'll check in with Hammer and kind of an off weekend for Oaklawn after the Arkansas Derby and the Fantasy and the good racing last week, Carousel, and a couple of Arkansas-bred sprint stakes, the Rainbow and Rainbow Miss. But Hammer last night was at Dave Hill's Vapors read and rap. Dave, and he almost, he had real trouble getting there if you were following Dave's exploits yesterday with the harrowing travel circumstance. But he did get home to Hot Springs in his hometown. And he read from the book and told some stories. And Hammer was on hand, so we'll hear about it. But just kind of a quick visit with Hammer. Scott Shapiro is back after his vacation, or not vacation, I think it was a wedding, right? Wasn't it like a wedding function for Shap last week? So we'll check in with Scott Shapiro. Bobby Shoemaker is going to swing through, get some opinions at the top, almost near the top of the hour, about 10:50 from Shoe to see what he likes this weekend. I think he probably thought I forgot about him, but he actually got a little cold. He had a little cold spell, and so I thought, you know what, let him shake off the whatever was ailing him. And he got back in the swing, and I think picked off a nice contest score as well. So we'll check in with two-turn turf races. Bobby Shoemaker, Jay has mentioned, Dave Grenig. Almost forgot about Dave, actually, and I realized last night at some point, I said, holy cow, I got to reach Grenick. And so Dave will join us. We'll get the aqueduct picture from him. Seth Merrow, who's been in the green room all week. It's been, for just whatever circumstance has found us unable to circle in with Seth, so we'll get some of his weekend opinions as well, and Papo Morales will do form to win snapshots before we wrap up today. All right, so there's the lineup and the action, and let me see if there was anything that I got to get to beforehand. Not particularly, actually. There's some things that are, you know, piling up for next week that we will worry about next week. A couple of mentions. Don't forget about the Kentucky Derby future wager. An early dismissal tomorrow, 4:30 before the three preps. So suspend yourself a note, set a timer, you know, for 4 o'clock. So it reminds you that you got a half hour to make any plays, anybody that looks overlaid, et cetera. And, I should mention that the Breeze Show, at OBS starting to see some of those video clips, of the Breeze. And of course, the sale will start on Tuesday through Friday next week. So we'll be keeping tabs on that as well. And the Breezes go through Sunday, right? Just looking at the, through Saturday. Yeah. From Sunday to Saturday. Do I have this right? Sunday to Saturday. Yes, there you go. All right. And then Easter week for the sale ahead of Derby. The rest of this can wait. There's some HISA stuff to talk about as well, including that set of rules, but we're not certainly doing it on Weekend Preview at the Races, brought to you by Twin Spires. Let's reach for Marcus, actually. And Case, I did not ask you the question, but I assume I'm doing one more day of reaching the guests, and very excited today because the new equipment, the new piece of equipment that we've been looking forward to for several years, actually, is coming later today. But Marcus Hirsch is with us right this minute, and that's the first order of business. Marcus, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. You all caught up on the rest, and you got back your equilibrium?
No. Oh, Dubai. Yes, I'm back.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
It's been busy.
Well,
also, fair warning, I've been separated from my laptop briefly, so don't ask me too many super specific questions about these cards. Squeezing it in the midst of a busy work day.
Well, let's do it, and we can hit the highlights. And actually, I do have in front of me, I'm looking actually at your analysis and your selection. So yeah. I can help you if you need any support.
I may need help.
First order of business in terms of how these couple of days shape up, it feels like turf is going to be okay today.
Did they put a condition out yet?
Not yet.
I don't know. It's cold. It's been raining. Rained quite a bit a couple of days ago. Lightened up a little bit. I think it's going to be, it doesn't usually get soft here because of the sand base.
Right.
Maybe good to yield it.
Yeah, I think they'll do everything they can. Obviously, the stake side, I'm not worried about, but would love to hold those allowance races together as well. So we'll watch for that. I've reached out to everybody, Ben Huffman and some horsemen. So we're waiting to hear. In terms, Marcus, of in terms of this opening weekend, give us some themes from your perspective.
Amazing cards both days. I don't think I've ever seen 2 days quite as strong as this, top to bottom. The purses, I think, have a lot to do with it. Full fields in nearly all the races, and not just full fields, but I think super competitive fields in most instances. I thought the stakes came up for the most part with excellent fields that you have to be happy with from a track management and a betting perspective. I don't think you could really ask for much more, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I think everybody has been kind of overwhelmed by what they're looking at. And, the stakes are one thing where you have certain expectations, especially this opening weekend with the three-year-olds being, so well represented. And you're familiar, for the most part, with a lot of those horses. To me, it was the allowances and these you know, at this point, you'd have to call them mid-season maiden specials that are fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think more so than in any years that I can remember recently, and I have not been doing the analysis that long. Of course, I pay attention to the meet, but I think far more people held back horses that they might have run in other venues in past years, just in anticipation of that. And, I mean, maybe some people are having second thoughts about that now because these spots are really tough, and maybe they could have gotten in a much easier spot where they were before. But it's $100,000 for a maiden race, and people were well aware of that, and I think you see the effect of it.
Well, and there's an interesting mix, particularly today in that sixth race, three-year-old fillies, and they all seem to me kind of moderate. There's three firsters, and all of them had some siblings that held interest to me. So everything you looked at here had intrigue, including in some cases horses that are outposted. You know, some of the favorites or some of the top choices that are going to have to work out trips from either inside or outside in a lot of these spots. Before we talk about Saturday's card, which is the principal concern, Marcus, a couple of hits on today. Your Ashland thoughts?
Well, I was surprised where I ended up there, really, because I hadn't even considered Happy Soul as a horse that might be like an Ashland Oaks horse until I went back and watched her last race, and that Oaklawn race was a real eye opener. I mean, I knew she was a good 2-year-old last year, and I saw her debut, and she was one of Wesley Ward's better early 2-year-olds. But I thought the appearance she made at Oaklawn was a real eye opener for me. I was not there, but watching that video, I thought she had a surprising amount of scope. She's like a big, strong horse, and not just with a long stride, but kind of like just the stride cadence and rhythm of a horse who would stretch out. She didn't seem like a precocious 2-year-old sprinter in any way. I liked the way that she rated, and I loved the way that she finished. It gave me a lot of confidence that if she could make an easy lead, she would settle. And I do think that, you know, she looks clearly like the speed to me. Unless Interstate Daydream really goes for it. I was surprised when the line came out because I didn't see her as necessarily a 5-2 shot, and I'd be hoping for a little more in the wind pool. But I do like that horse. I mean, Cox's horse, Interstate Daydream, was extremely impressive in a maiden race last time, obviously less experienced than as far as accomplishment than Wesley Ward's horse. I think that Nest is going to take quite a bit of money. I'm not completely sold on her quality. I think that she's got a chance to improve still, and she's done some good things, but I didn't learn much about her from the Tampa race. You just overmatched those horses. There wasn't much behind her there. I will say that in talking to Fletcher, he's got three or four horses in today, and he did say that this is going to be more of a focus for him than it has been in recent years, and he may have especially geared some of these horses to races early in this meet that, you know, more so than in previous seasons, I'd say.
Well, that's notable because he does dot these first two cards, and that's... that's a potential storyline to watch, and you know, this is a meet where you know we're always aware. I mean, Wesley is no news, and of course we do have the 2-year-old race that starts the meet today, and we'll start
which
to
Wesley
see
Wesley will win.
You're all over the ward.
I have the wrong one. I tried to get smart, but I have since gained information that strongly suggests that. What is that horse's name? Romantica?
Dominica. Dominicana.
Dominicana. Dominicana, yes. That's the Uncle Mo, I believe.
Yes, right? Correct.
With Johnny B. Yeah, I think, she's going to be heavily favored. I was trying to get tricky. Ford's other horse had a sibling that has won one of these races. Potentially on pedigree be more precocious, but I think I have the wrong one there.
Interesting. well, this, and I went over this a little bit with Marty for a couple of different reasons, including the first two Motowns making their appearances. Then, of course, you've got basically baby specialists like Louis Mendez. Louis Mendez coming to town from California, and he's got that pair. And then, actually, a name came up that was unfamiliar, and I got some terrific information from our friend Karen Glassman. The name that came up yesterday, John Jaszewski.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Please enlighten me.
I'm going to tell everybody because Karen was nice enough to send this note. He is a equine dentist, first and foremost, and a very highly regarded equine dentist. And he has dabbled and trained, you know, horses, off to the side, and has got some homebreds, and he's got some less expensive purchase types, and then took out the license and started sending them out in his name when the occasion arose. So little background on John.
Excellent. I think he has a couple horses in too, not just this one. I recall correctly.
He's in the first, and he's also in the third with Barbarino, with Vinny Barbarino, the 30-1 shot in the third. There you go. The sweat hog. I love it. Marcus, let's also get a quick thought on how this Transylvania unfolds, because if the turf is a little soft, you would think Coinage is going to end up being the one that they're going to have to run down. And then the Lafayette came up just super.
I thought the Lafayette was really good. The Transylvania, one of the shorter fields. But I like Verbal in that race, so will a lot of people. I know, Coinage could get loose. Several of those horses were, I think, pretty early developers that I am going to be a little skeptical of as making a huge leap from 2 to 3. But Verbal, I think, is not that kind of horse. I thought that he ran very well, obviously, and won relatively early in his career. But he just looks like a horse who's going to get better with age and experience. I think that he'll have a chance to run down the pace setters, even if they're going slow. He just looks like that kind of horse to me. He's not going to be much of a price. The horse on the rail for Cassie, whose name's escaping me right now. Credibility, is
correct.
That correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'm good. I will say, in a general sense, is this is a tricky course at times. It's kind of you either like it or you don't. And I do put a lot of stock in horses who have run well on it before. And he did run one of his best races. There was some cut in the ground last fall. He's going to be a bit of a place. I thought he might be able to sneak into the exotics. I just don't know. I don't know about Coinage. I saw some good things from him last year, but I just don't know how far he has to come right now. Speed at times was good last year when the turf course was wet, but I wouldn't count on that at all. I think that remains to be seen.
The Lafayette, the 7/8, and my prankster for Pletcher, 9/5, but there are plenty of options in here.
Yeah, I was keen to take him on, actually.
Yeah.
He's fine. I think, it's pretty clear at this point that his supposedly dazzling debut victory at Saratoga was not necessarily a precursor of greatness. I think he hit his ceiling somewhat rapidly in the Champagne. I did cover that race, and so I talked to the trainer. People see a gap in his works. He had a fever and missed 5 days, so there's a 15-day gap there. But that did not cost him any starts. This had been the goal all along since he won his last race. In watching him work, there was one work on video where he was with Pletcher's maiden filly today, who ran in the stakes race, and her name is escaping me as well, but maybe he's not a dazzling workhorse generally, but that didn't really do much for me, and I don't know how much he's actually grown up. The trainer suggested as much in conversation. That doesn't mean he can't win this race, but I think there are plenty of ways to go. I mean, I think Tejano Twist is probably the horse to beat in the parlance of the gambler.
Hmm. And I do see you actually you put Dallas on top with that Magnolia Midnight.
I did. I mean, I went through that race pretty carefully. I did. I mean, Tejano Twist would have been kind of the more obvious selection for me. He ran on a speed bias track, inside speed bias track at Fairgrounds last time. He, to me, like ran totally fine in defeat. After the Gun Runner, which wasn't bad, they, I think, rightly decided to just cut him back. excuse me. And if you look at his form, you can see he's probably a little better at 6.5 or 7 or even a mile. Orders. So in addition to chasing the inside speed on what I thought was a biased surface last time, he was going 6 furlongs, which is a bit on the sharp side. I think he got what he needed out of that race. I don't mind the wide draw in races at this distance of such a long run. Now the backstretch to the turn. But I do think, I thought I saw enough pace factors here that I think they're going to go pretty fast. So I was looking for something coming from mid-pack or farther back, and I wanted a price. And this horse, to me, has a look of a lot of horses where, and I think I mentioned this either in my stakes advance or the analysis, like you don't know when Dallas's horses are going to get good, but he often finds a way to get them good. And I think you should pay attention when suddenly something changes. Like this horse was okay early, ran a lot. Ben seemed to find himself at Oaklawn. He did have a little trouble, came, had to switch outside after being in a tough spot, an upper stretch, and I thought finished very nicely and galloped out well, immediately was freshened, has worked fast, going to be, you know, I think significantly off the pace and should really like 7 furlongs at a price. So, thus the little shot there at a price in the Lafayette.
I also went with a price, and I'll post the analysis over at the website shortly. Down on the rail, here's Osborne, a horse that Moquette has had absolute confidence in and has touted from day one, broke his maiden going 7/8 at Churchill. Here is a turn back that is something that Moquette does very well. And in fact, Whitmore, one horse in a stake pulled this trick, and he's a horse that's got some tactical speed, and from the rail, Gaffalione is going to have to gain some early position, but I thought Osborne rated a long look at that price on the turn back.
Well, you will definitely get a price on him, I would say. I just worry about horses drawn on the rail with some speed going 7/8, because you can get in a lot of trouble.
Sure.
With that. Let's see. I have my form back in front of me, so I don't have to be completely as clueless. What do you think of Money Supply?
It's funny. Chad has got a whole bunch of horses like this that were a little late getting started, and that he very cleverly placed to get going. You know, without much resistance, and now he's, you know, going forward with them. I'm using Money Supply, and I also thought that, frankly, Brett Brinkman, who you know well, who brought us Scylla, who runs tomorrow in the Madison, old Homestead could very well forget to stop here.
He's an interesting horse. If you watch his races, I mean, he travels pretty nicely. I don't know. Is he fast? He might be fast enough to make the lead. I think that he's going to get pressure from the outside. We'll see. But he goes pretty good. They tried to the breeders and owners had him in a sale. I think Mr. Brinkman told me he thought that the horse didn't work as well as they thought, so they took him out of the sale, sent him to Brinkman, Louisiana, and. You know, he's just won so easily. It's hard to know how he's going to respond in a race with, like, taking any pressure or having to do anything other than just gallop along because he's crushed those horses at Delta. I do like the way he goes, and he said his work on April 2nd at Keeneland. I mean, that three-quarters work at Evangeline caught my eye, too, the 13 and change. That's pretty strong. And then in his Keeneland work, he got behind horses, split him, and showed that he might be able to not necessarily have to be on the lead. But anyway, I noticed the jockey, Thomas Pompel, seeking his first ever Keeneland win. A pace factor for sure. I don't know. I mean, Money Supply, remember, was scratched from the Tampa Bay Derby, I believe. They had different ideas with him a little bit, but I liked his race. I think that the buyer likes him more than I liked it. I think he's going to get bet too. I don't know. This is an interesting race. Lots of ways to go, and I think it's a key part of the you know, the late pick five sequence, because I do think, I mean, maybe my prankster just, you know, beats me, but I think that's an opportunity to take on a favorite.
I completely agree. Let's turn to Saturday. Marcus Hirsch with us. He's at Keeneland and getting ready for the Bluegrass tomorrow. Mentioned the Madison already, the two grade ones, but there's a lot of good racing, the Commonwealth, the Shakertown, and more. Marcus, let's start with the feature and talk about the three-year-old boys.
Well, it seems like one of the better Bluegrasses recently. I'm a big fan, generally speaking, of both Smile Happy and Zandon. I thought, well, I mean, they're behind Epicenter, who I think we see what he is at this point. And both of them ran well in that race. Smile Happy is just, for whatever reason, I'm quite fond of the horse. I did watch him train a little at Fairgrounds, not freeze or anything, just gallop. But boy, he's got some, that horse goes really well and seems like he can run all day. I thought he might be a little sharper last time. Not the case, but excuse me, I don't think he was ever going to win that race the way that Epicenter got loose and kicked clear at the top of the stretch. However, past the 3/8 pole, he could have gone outside and gotten into the clear and had a nice clean run at it and come a lot closer. Instead, the rider, who likes to stay inside and save ground, which is an admirable trait in a lot of situations, he kept him in the two path. Zandon came outside of him, and then suddenly he was in a jackpot, or just stopped in traffic and really had to wait at a key moment before splitting horses coming through and finishing with good energy, galloping out in front. He didn't win. I thought it was a good first start of the year, and a quite build up. I don't see anything since then to suggest that he can't continue to improve. The mile and an eighth obviously is fine. And Zandon, they both finished in like 12.14 for the last eight at Fairgrounds, which is pretty good stuff for a 9-furlong early season 3-year-old. Zandon left in the air at the start, put him in a terrible spot. Turn and finish.
Oh, Marcus having some phone. Getting the phones coming in and out a little.
How about now?
Better.
Okay. Anyway, this is like with the Ashland. After I started looking more closely at the race, I ended up on a horse I didn't think I'd be picking. That's Emmanuel, who is much better than I realized coming in. Going back to his debut, the breakout buyers thing I do every week, Wednesday on the Friday newspaper at the Daily Racing Forum, he was a horse that I liked better than his number. I really liked his first race. Obviously, he crushed the foes. Glider's not terrible. Easy, soft pace at Tampa, but I'm sure a lot of people have seen his Fountain of Youth trip. He was off a half step slow, got bumped from the inside, and then pinched back when the two horses inside and out and outside of him came together, ended up in a spot that he'd not been close to inhabiting in his first two races. A lot more demanding. He was 7 wide at the half mile pole, didn't go quite that wide around the far turn, but was 4 to 5 wide while under a ride because the jockey had no options. He had to just go for it. Might have put his head in front or was head and head for the lead turning for home and really hung in there. I thought amazingly well considering the circumstances until like about 70 yards left when he finally got worn down. It was an excellent race, way better than the number, or if you didn't watch it. And as the potential lone speed here for Fletcher, and I really liked the work that I saw in video from this horse. I can't remember what date it was. I don't believe it was his last one. I think he's going to get loose. I think he'll get a mile and an eighth, and he might have enough of an advantage to hold off these two horses coming at him that I think are pretty good in Smile Happy and Sandit.
Interesting. 9-2 on the morning line of Mike Battaglia. And you might, he's probably going to get that, aren't you?
I don't know. He's pretty obviously low in speed, and that trip's pretty obvious. He was 7-5 first time out, 3-10 at Tampa, 5-2 in the Fountain of Youth. And there's not, below the obvious top two that I mentioned, there's not a ton of horses that are going to get money. He might, maybe, might be 9-2. I'm going to guess a little lower. I'd say less than 4-1.
All right. Just has not been as, really has not been much chatter. At least I haven't seen it.
Me either. What's up with that?
Right? You would think.
No, the more you look at it, the more you think maybe there ought to have been more chatter.
Right. Exactly. All right, Emmanuel. There's an alternate. The first alternate idea that we've heard so far on Bluegrass, and we'll have we got at least another 4 or 5 voices to hear from.
Really? So it's all Zandon and Smile Happy. Smile Happy and Zandon in that order, if I were to guess.
They have dominated the discussion points. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Understandably.
All right, we'll see what else everybody's got to say. Let's stick with the grade ones for a minute and the Madison, which is just invariably the first major filly and mare sprint opportunity, and it's always hard not to be rooting for Neil Pessin. Bell's the one.
Okay, I mean, I root for Neil. Nice guy.
We all
guy.
Root for Neil.
Did a good job with his horse. I'm a Kamari fanboy, so my allegiance has to be with her. I do think this race came up fabulously well. Really strong group. Scylla's good. Center Isle's good. Lady Rocket's good. Just One Time is good. Bell's the One is good. Kamari's good. I mean, those are to me the major ones. The other horses are, I think they're all a cut below. You know, that remains to be seen. But that's a lot of firepower. I don't know. I mean, Kamari, last year when she won the Madison, I couldn't believe the price that she was 7-10. She looked like a 5-2 or 3-1 shot in that race, if I recall correctly. I wonder if she gets hammered again and creates some value on these other horses. But I mean, Cox has got to take some money. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how the betting's going to play out, but I do think there are a lot of ways to turn, although I did turn Kamari not just because I'm fond of the horse, but because she won the race last year, even though she's 5, she's only started 12 times. And when you can see from her record, when Ward has her, you know, pointed to races like this, she fires. I mean, even in the Breeders' Cup Tour Sprint, which was just too short for her and she got way too far back, she flew home. I mean, she's a really good horse.
No argument. There is a couple of price options in here beside the obvious. And certainly the effort of Just One Time, something that ended up getting widely discussed on this show because Brad had really kind of tipped his hand leading into the inside information. And Flavian Pratt takes over for Joel Rosario in here, and that's... That's certainly a lateral move at worst. She's 8-1, and
that's the price on her. Are you kidding?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I'm sorry to laugh.
That's the beauty of big fields. You know, here's a 10-horse field, and you know somebody's got to get lost when.
Well, she's not going to get lost.
All right,
I'll be shocked if she's anywhere near that price.
Well, she's. I'm very interested. It's a wonderful group, actually, and it includes also Lady Rocket for Cox, but the aforementioned Brett Brinkman and Scylla.
I prefer Just One Time to Lady Rocket.
Me
too. 5-2. Wow, 5-2. Now I don't see the betting going quite that way, but. Just One Time was, I mean, she ran fast last year, and if there's rain this afternoon, I can't even look at the forecast yet. It's sunny right now. Didn't look good before. Anyway, she's handled different course conditions. I mean, her Spire speed figures before they sold an interest in her were extraordinary, and she loved the 7-8. She's been pointed to this race. She worked 1-11 and 1 at Fairgrounds. Horses do not work that fast there. I think she's going to run very competitively. I mean, Belle's the one has been named here since before she even came back into Neil Pezin's barn this winter. She likes Keeneland. I mean, she delivers almost every time, but this race just came up so tough, and she's six. I don't know. I don't know that she can do much better than she did in the past. That might not be good enough this year.
A good addition, as always, of the Madison. It goes as the seventh, and it starts the late pick five. Marcus, a couple of other spots. Let's correspond to the Madison with the grade three Commonwealth. These are the males going the same 7/8.
Sure.
Nashville made a heavy-handed even money in here. There's some very nice horses that line up in here. Prevalence, as we talked about with Brendan Walsh on Tuesday, and Obesos also in the open air outside box for Greg Foley.
That's my pick. Those are my two top. I like have it Obesos over Prevalence.
Wow.
I mean, Nashville could just air. I grant that completely. That field he beat last time, and no offense to the horses in it. I mean, those were not, they're fine horses, but if he got loose, he was supposed to, he bossed those horses. He went very fast. He did it pretty comfortably. Got a win on the course. Don't know for sure yet how he's going to do at 7/8. I think he would be fine, but I can't get the first two of the year out of my mind. I just don't trust him to deliver today or tomorrow. I won't be shocked if he does, but at the expected price, I wanted to try to beat him. Obesos, I think, is the right horse on the cutback. He did not run badly at all in the mineshaft, which was pretty slow-paced and won in course record time by Olympiad, who is a fabulous horse in great form right now. But even in that race and in the race, his comeback race that he won over a very sharp, intrepid Heart, who is, you know, like a 100,000 claimer or something at this point. He's a good horse, right on the listed stake class. Those route races suggested to trainer Greg Foley that this horse might appreciate a longer one-turn race. And if you go back and watch his two wins at Fairgrounds last winter, well, two winters ago, he has the look of a horse who could really excel as a kind of a one-run closer in these longer sprints. I think he's going to run really well. If Nashville gets loose and runs to his capability, it might not matter. And Prevalence's buyer jumped through the roof last time in the one-turn mile, where I liked his race. I was impressed especially that he was able to show that much pace again. I thought that was a very positive sign. He has the qualifications from his first couple starts where he was a hot Triple Crown commodity before things kind of went off the rails in the wood and then worse in the Pat Day mile. I didn't quite like his race visually as much as the number, but often the numbers are more correct than my vision.
Give us the rationale behind making Dolce or Spenderella your best bet of the day in the Appalachian.
Spenderella. Well, I try to get a little better prices than that. Oh, 7/5. Yeah, that's kind of rough. Well, so that race, the timer went amiss. I mean, I did like her first race. I was a little skeptical of the price on her in the Here Comes the Bride. The timer didn't work. They hand timed it, but you could tell they were going fast just looking at it. And when they got like to the, past the half mile pole and going to the 3/8, the two leaders opened up a huge gap on the rest of the field. The horse that was pressing the pace, I think, finished eighth. She was 20-1. I can't remember her name off the top of my head. She was maybe not supposed to run that well, but I think that the pace took a toll on that filly. Whereas when the closer started to gain ground on Spenderella in upper stretch, and she kind of felt them coming, she had plenty left in the tank, and won comfortably and galloped out very well. I love turf route horses with speed. You take out of play all the terrible things that can happen to the horse you pick in turf races. And I just think she's set to run another big race, and I think she'll dominate on the front end.
Finally, on the stake front, the Shakertown. And,
great race.
Yeah, this is fun, and it's the start of the cross-country pick five.
Well, I have nothing special to add here. I did want to beat Golden Pal, but I couldn't pick against him in the end. He's 4-5 on the line. I just wonder, I thought that he really shined when he got out to California because he's a horse who wants to stay on top of the ground and go fast, which he got to do there. And the courses he'd run on previously didn't quite permit him to show, I think, his best self. And he might get that again, but it doesn't matter. He's just so good. I think he's going to have a great four-year-old year. I think he'll at least be as good as he was in the Breeders' Cup and probably better. I mean, it's just a question of can Just Might run with him. The horse drawn outside is very fast. I mean, if the course blunts his brilliance at all and if Just Might pressures him the whole way, you know, the race is open to an upset. I thought there were a couple of candidates. The Learjet being one, who did get a nice inside trip at Kentucky Downs against, you know, probably horses not quite as good as these. He did beat Golden Pal way back in 2020 at Royal Ascot. And then I took a long look at Gear Jockey, even though this is slightly short of what he'd prefer. He was too bad to be believed in the Gulfstream race last time. The trainer offered no particular excuse, just said he was not interested in running that day. He's come back to work very swiftly and does have an affinity for the Keeneland course, which I mentioned earlier in our conversation is, I think, a strong asset. He could have a big bounce back race at a price.
Marcus, I'll let everybody know, too, in the non-stake events, in the second race, you tabbed Emirates Road, who's 8-1 for Brendan Walsh, and you got 5-1 Charles Chrome on top in the Nightcap, another turf sprint.
Yeah, that's a complicated race, too. The favorite there is Momos. He tends to wait on horses, so he could be vulnerable. It's a great sequence. Looking forward to it for sure.
Marcus Hirsch, everybody. DRF Hirsch, who will be doing the lead analysis at Keeneland again this spring. Marcus, I appreciate it. And then I guess what, you'll go home for a freshening and then back for Derby?
Freshening, maybe. But even if I don't get the freshening, I will, God willing, be back for Derby. Yes, looking forward to that a lot.
Well, we'll talk to you during the meet as it unfolds the next couple of weeks. DRF Hirsch, everybody. Thanks, Marcus. Really good, as always.
Thanks, Steve. Good luck.
You too. Marcus Hirsch, folks, and we'll keep at it. James Scully is going to join us next. We'll get into the action with Scully. And as I reach for James, let me mention, it's so funny how when a topic comes up or, you know, an individual in this case, John Jaduski, Ron Moquette listening in, and I'm sure he's. I don't know if he's happy or troubled that I'm picking Osborne today, but he mentioned and sent me a note that they bought, I think for Harry Rosenbloom, they bought Far Right from John Jaduski. That's where Far Right came from. So we yet another. They seem to come out of Keeneland quite a bit. You know, this kind of a small training outfit that develops horses and makes a habit of you know, then putting them out on the market. And now you got a new name to follow. So we're rooting for John today with in the first and in the third. In the first, he's got the baby, You're a Dandy. And in the third, he comes back with Barbarino. So watch for John now. And here's James Scully standing by. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
James?
Hey, I'll tell you, it's sunny and pretty. It's sunny and nice. It's chilly, but it's sunny here in Lexington. It doesn't seem like we have bad weather coming, but that's what everybody's predicted.
Well, all right. And I think for now, it looks like turf not an issue. So I haven't seen anything else, and I've reached
absolutely
out.
Absolutely. And any rain this afternoon, it looks like it'll be real scattered. Won't get any heavy stuff, hopefully during the afternoon. So yeah, it looks pretty good right now.
Well, before we do anything and start getting some opinions, let me get the Kentucky Derby report from last week from you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, two real big races, but three total with the Florida Derby and the Arkansas Derby. Obviously, the Florida Derby, I thought White of Abario showed something in terms of his previous race with the Holy Bull. I thought the pace setter stopped going into the far turn, just allowing him to inherit an easy lead. So it was sort of a little bit of a cushy trip that day. But he had to earn it on Saturday, more so in the Florida Derby. Sat off the pace, you know, rallied wide and proved best there. It was a good effort. Obviously, charge it. Not only did he hit the gate at the start, I thought Luis Saez had to ride him at like on the back stretch and on the turn, you know, the horse was just sort of racing in spots. And then, obviously him ducking in and such, you know, looks like he could be really good down the road for Todd Pletcher. And Simplification, while he ran third, I thought he had a little bit of excuse. I think he's more effective stalking, using more push button tactics. And he's not going to be like up there chasing the lead in the Derby. So he could run better with a better trip. Obviously, the concern is they did not finish fast at all. That was a slow final 3/8 of a mile in that race, Steve. And the speed ratings didn't come back, you know, very strong. But, you know, visually it looked like a good group. And I thought in Arkansas Derby, Cyberknife, he's just improving. I mean, a really good race. I think he'll be a very productive 3-year-old the rest of the year for Brad Cox. Whether he's good enough to win the Kentucky Derby, I think is a legitimate question. But very solid race, splitting horses going into the far turn like he did. I thought he settled nicely after sort of being hustled from the gate. And, you know, once he got clear in the top of the stretch, he easily, I thought, you know, held it to the wire. So big step forward for him. You know, the Jeff Ruby Stakes, obviously on synthetic, Tis the Bomb ran poorly in the Holy Bull earlier this year. But Churchill's a different track from Gulfstream. And that horse has taken a step forward in those last two races. That race was fast, 148 at change. He won convincingly. You know, it'll be interesting to see how he trains at Churchill Downs, because that was the one thing with Animal Kingdom. He worked extremely forwardly at Churchill in a 6-furlong workout going into the Derby. And I'll be interested to see how Tis the Bomb, because, you know, there could be a lot of speed in the race. And he's one at least I'm considering definitely for any kind of vertical exotic, Steve.
Well, there's actually going to be a hatful of horses that are going to have to be closely monitored. And that also includes Crown Point, who's out there every morning, a la, you know, Lanny and you know, the other Japanese types, and Summer Is Tomorrow, and even I was going to say something funny, or at least I thought it might be funny this morning, when Kevin Kirstein put up a video of Zozos completing his work and heading back to the barn. Yesterday, there was Cyberknife going out, and there was a pony, and there was Brad Cox walking behind, and here's Zozos, and there's nothing. there's always, in big barns, you know, some horses just aren't going to get, you know, and maybe he's a horse that, you know, you don't have to worry about. Cyberknife happens to be, you know, known as a high strung type, and Zozos may just be a workaday horse who doesn't need supervision.
Yeah, I mean, Zozos is another horse. I mean, there's a horse to me, he doesn't look like he's cut out for a mile and a quarter, but I mean, you know, he could win a lot of stake races this year. He definitely has something going for him. I liked his race running second and being a clear second last time. And, you know, he's got Tawny Port also, Brad Cox. It'll be interesting to see how his horses train. You know, to me, one thing with Mandaloon last year was he worked 6 furlongs at Churchill Downs real effortlessly in his next to last work. Look at all those works at Churchill leading into the Derby. They're typically all these 4 or 5 furlong drills. And I thought Mandaloon's 6-furlong work, people that, you know, were betting him on Derby Day were betting him a little bit off of that work. So there's a potential, you know, the workouts, you know, how important they are leading into a race like the Derby could be debated. Sometimes, you know, they're way less important than other times. But this year is a year where you have like all these question marks. You know, it's going to be something I'm paying attention to, how they're training going into the race.
Well, before we talk about the three final 100-point races tomorrow, let's get that leaderboard updated. And this is going to be the deciding Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Deciding Saturday. And once again, you know, if you've been playing along, you know, make sure you get your $25 win bets in. If you haven't played, you can still hop in. If you've got some prices, there's a potential because this pays $100 all the way to the 100th place finisher. Yeah, right now it's a tight battle. At the top of the leaderboard, where Wayne and Louisiana and Charles and Ohio both have 712 points, and they're being chased by Christopher from Minnesota with 667 and David from New York with 659, a whole pack behind them. So, yeah, it's going to come down to this last weekend, and we'll have a Lexington next week as well, which will offer some points towards the Derby.
Well, there's a lot at stake, $15,000 to the winner, plus the VIP trip for two to the Derby, $10,000 to the runner-up and the trip to the Derby. And even if you don't win a trip to Derby, still some nice cash prizes, $8,000, $6,000, $4,500, $4,000, pays down basically $1,500 and more down to 10th. And then even all the way to 100th place gets $100. And so then 300, 500, 800, you know, as you go down the you know, into the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, et cetera.
And also I mentioned this at Twin Spires. We've got these stakes bet backs. You bet $10 minimum to win, and got like the Ashland, the Bluegrass, and the Madison and Keeneland this weekend, and the Wood Memorial at Aqueduct. You get $10 back if the horse runs second or third. Opt in for that, and lots of more promotions and offers going on at TwinSpires.com.
We should mention too, because it's you know, it's opening day at Keeneland. There's this $15,000 place jackpot every single day for the 15 $1,000 offerings. Just opt in here. You opt in. You hit a winning place bet $10 or more in six races at Keeneland, and you win a share of the daily pot. And you know, who knows? I'd be curious to see. You know, some days
that pot could be even more, because you know, if you've got to hit six place wagers to hit the jackpot that day. And if you had a day where a bunch of long shots come in, you might have somebody doesn't hit six place wagers,
right?
$1,000 carries over the next day, so it'll be $2,000 on the line, and so on. So it's a fun contest, you know, picking place horses to win free money at Keeneland.
Well, and we should note that at the end of the meet on April 29th, if nobody hits, the way it gets split is whoever has the most place wagers on closing day, that's how it'll be split the last day. That's the but this is you know, one of those things, you know, especially if you're a win place better. I mean, if you're somebody that bets win place a lot, and with these kinds of fields, win place bets make some sense, honestly. The way these big groups, at least the first 3 days of cards, are shaping up. Let's dive in. What are we doing, James? Where are we going?
All right, well, I'll just start with Keeneland. I'll start tomorrow's card, roll through some of my picks. I got a couple picks before we get to the stakes I'll mention real quick. In the opener tomorrow 16th maiden race, going to have a couple favorites, number 5, Creative Minister, and number 12, Enough Already. They're both coming off runner-up finishes. I'm not, I wouldn't be surprised to see either one win, but I don't think they have to win. I'm going to use this number 6, Tim Tal. He's 30-1 on the morning line, Steve. He's trained by Eric Reed, first time out late December. He just got away slowly, passed half the field. I like his last two efforts at Turfway. I think he showed more tactical foot in those races. And if he gets out of the gate, I'm not expecting much pace in here to get a trip under John McKee. I think he has a shot to hit the board at 30-1. He's run against some decent fields. Two back, Golden Eye, beat him. That horse came right back and ran in a couple stakes. The runner-up, Icarus, Brad Cox horse, came right back and beat him again the next time. And the runner-up from that race, Leslie Chow, won a maiden race next out. Eric Reed has won races in the spring, the last two spring meets at Keeneland 2019 and last year, and because they didn't have a spring meet in 2020. And they've been priceless. So I'm keeping an eye out on these Turfway horses, Steve, at least early here in this weekend, especially from, you know, just a price even hitting the board kind of perspective. And this is a horse that I just caught my eye a little bit in that opener.
Number six, Tim Tao and Eric Reed, big fans of Eric, and he's got Rich Strike right now sitting at 21st, or 20th, I should say, because I can take you could take Papa Cap out. So he's actually 20th right now on the Derby points and is basically watching, and he's rooting for all the ones ahead. He's certainly rooting for Morello and Forbidden Kingdom and probably even Grantham and Smile Happy, too, to succeed.
And Classic Causeway could come out. There's a chance for more.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Looking at race number four, number one OP Firecracker last fall at Churchill Downs broke his maiden going 7 furlongs. I like that win. He beat, that was his last dirt start. He came in today's mile and a 16th distance. Had Gaffleone. Came back this year in a pair of stakes at Turfway Park. Didn't get out of the gate very well in either one of those races. Ran fourth, and then he ran sixth last time, beating four lengths to Tis the Bomb and the John Battaglia Memorial. He's getting first-time Lasix, Robert Medina. I think he gets out of the gate. He gets back with Tyler Gaffleone. He gets that trip where he's stalking in third. This race doesn't have much speed. Race four tomorrow, OP Firecracker is 12-1 on the morning line, breaking from the rail.
Very good. Gets Lasix as well.
And turning to the first stake, the Commonwealth, I think this race did not get much pace. I think it's going to shape up where you have Nashville showing the way. You're going to have Prevalence up there pressing him, tracking him in second to his outside. And I look at these two horses, and, you know, with Prevalence, to me, you know, he bobbled out of the gate his first race back off a 10-month layoff, two back. Last time he got out good, and I really thought that was a career best. It was the fastest race he's run so far. Loved the way he tracked it second, you know, tracked early and then made his move and drew off in the stretch. I think he has something going for him for Belmont, 3 furlong bullet work at Keeneland in preparation. Nashville, I just don't think, you know, he got 6 lengths clear last time, but his fastest race came in 2020. I am a little bit concerned about those efforts at Oaklawn Park, especially as the one race where he didn't have any excuses and lost. And I just think that this is a race where Prevalence, to me, is going to get that good trip and is going to prove best.
Well, we've had Prevalence
also,
come up all
Nashville
week.
Also, is his lone start at 7 furlongs, he was unplaced. So there's a little bit of a thing where he is, like, you know, better at 6 furlongs. So that's why I'm going with Prevalence.
Very good.
Also, and then I'll turn to the Madison race 7. I thought last year in the Madison that Bell's the One had Kamari measured, and then she just hung. And, you know, she did that as well last year a little bit in Open Mind. And she's been prone to do that, you know, a little bit from time to time. But I think when she's on her game, she can run with any filly, a mare sprinter, you know, in training. And I think she's been training great. I think all reports about her are that she's been training forwardly. And, you know, coming back at age 6 for Pessin, I think they got serious aspirations. And I just think there's some pace entered in this race. I think they're going to be going pretty quick in there. And I look for Bell's the One to run a big race back in the spot. Keeneland, she's a Steve, she's a 3-time stakes winner at Keeneland.
We'd love to see it.
Turn into the Bluegrass. You know, to me, I look at the way that the pace on paper, and to me, Emmanuel led wire to wire in those first two starts and really got away with moderate fractions, at least in one of those races. And in that Gulfstream race, I didn't think that was a very good field. He beat the first time out. I look at Fenwick. You know, that horse last time is a length clear, going 23-1 at Tampa Bay. has just, you know, showed real improved speed last time. He's in post two. And I look at Trademark. Last November, he led wire to wire in an allowance race at Churchill Downs. He beat a horse, Red Run, that came right back to win a stake in his next race. I don't think he ran well stalking the pace in the last two. I think they realize his only chance is on the front end. I think both those horses are going to get sent. I don't think Emmanuel is going to get clear. I think it's going to be a contested pace, and I think it's going to set up well for Smile Happy. You know, I don't think that he was really ridden until the final 3/8 of a mile in his last race. I was looking for him to train forwardly out of that. He's got a 5 furlong bullet, a half mile fast move in preparation. And I just think this is a race that they're going to be trying to win. And he's good. I think the field's eligible to bunch up and, you know, leave in the far turn. And he's going to be finishing fastest of all for the victory.
All right.
Then taking a look at Aqueduct, I thought in the Wood Memorial, I think one thing about these races with Steve, I think there's a little bit of a question mark surrounding this, how fast these horses in South Florida at Gulfstream have been running this winter. Obviously, you know, the Tampa races, you know, I think there's a little question with those two. I it's a little bit of a litmus test with Emmanuel being in the Bluegrass and Mo Donegal being in the Wood Memorial. I'm fading them both. I think Morello, obviously the big question for him is two turns, but I think he's faster than all these race horses in the Wood Memorial, and I think he's going to sit a good trip just off the pace, and it's going to finish fastest of all. Hopefully he's not 8-5. I didn't think he'd be that short before the morning line came out. We'll see how it goes, but I like Morello in the Wood Memorial.
Very good. So Asmussen with the chance to add to the current favorite in Epicenter. Did you look at the Bayshore?
I did. What a dynamite race. It looks like the pace is absolutely going to be blazing in there. But I'll tell you right now, if I'm betting the multi-race bets, I'm going to use Scaramucci because I just think he could be the speed of the speed. You know, he's not my top selection, but I do respect his chances a little bit invading for Guadalupe Presadio. But I wound up landing on Life is Great. I didn't think he got the cleanest trip last time. Oh, he didn't get the cleanest trip last time, and he still ran fourth in that Gotham. I thought it was a solid performance. I liked, you know, I thought it was a good second to Morello, two back in the Wakefield, and I just think he's going to get a good, solid stalking trip just off the leaders to the outside and going to be in position to pounce turning for home with Derek Cancel. I'm giving him a slight edge in there. It's a really tough race, Steve.
The Bayshore is the race of the weekend that nobody has really talked about. It's just tremendous the way this came up, and no one has really said much. And it seems like the only horse that's an outsider is Juggler, but it's Juan Vasquez, and you know, he's difficult to deal with. I mean, he's been coming to New York with winning hand over fist, just unbelievable. But this one's an outsider.
Watching that race in February, but just the fact that Highly Respected went off 7-1 and won like he did, I mean, he looks like he has a chance to run really well from, you know, just a real sort of similar track, maybe, you know, trip, maybe no mid-pack, but you know, that's funny that horse got away at 7-1 to me for Chad Brown. It looks so good winning like he did at Aqueduct last time. Sorry to interrupt you there.
What else? Anything else?
You know, in the Santa Anita Derby, you know, I think I'm a little bit dubious about Forbidden Kingdom at the distance. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how close, how much, you know, because Messier, to me, just fell into the lead, and that Robert Lewis, he's more than comfortable stalking, and I think he's clearly going to be, you know, unless his stablemate shows more speed, he's going to be in that role of, like, trying to, you know, go after Forbidden Kingdom first. But that Taiba is just the ultimate wild card in there, because if those two horses hook up, like going in the far turn or ding dong, and the race could set up. I'm a little, you know, even with Messier, I mean, I know his pedigree, it seems like, oh, it's bred just so well for longer distances, and I know he won by 15, but he's got a little bit of a look of like more of like a middle distance type to me. So while I expect him to win, and I think Kaiba's too inexperienced, you know, he is a little bit interesting in there where he could just get that dream trip. Even if he won that race, I think he just would go straight to the Preakness. I don't think that he's like really under Derby consideration. Maybe I'm completely wrong about that, but yeah, I like Messier in the Santa Anita Derby, but I am intrigued by Taiba.
That was definitely the on Wednesday when they opened up that entry box. That was absolutely the wild card, no doubt.
And my last Second Friday pick is going to come at Kima today. I think in the Lafayette Stakes, I like Surfer Dude cutting back to 7 furlongs. He broke his maiden 3 starts back at Churchill Downs. He's a colt to me. He ran third to Epicenter after setting the pace in the Gunrunner. And he really, Epicenter broke running in that Risen Star, and they really chased hard after him and wound up weakening that day. But I think that Old Homestead's going to show speed, and Surfer Dude's going to be sitting second with Irad Ortiz. I think he's going to run big on the cutback. Steve, I think the Risen Star was the best prep of the year. I think those Louisiana races have had, like, arguably, you know, outside of Southern in east of the Mississippi, have had the fastest horses running in them. So I look at this Surfer Dude, and I'm willing to say, hey, yeah, you know, he's going to run big off of his experiences, cutting back to an entry, you know, but cutting back to this 7 furlong race in this Lafayette Stakes.
Very good. Lafayette's really entertaining. Plenty of options. I mean, between me and you and Marcus right now,
for making stallions.